Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Sports summer in full swing. Last couple of weeks, do-it-yourself project, Lowe's, bar cart, tray, big C on it. I'll put it on Twitter tonight. You show you my tray. It's kind of magnificent.
I'm glad you remember what it's called.
It's a tray. So one of the things, I've always had this theory on Boston people. So Boston people just become successful because they've got an edge to them. Dana White's a Boston guy. He got a lot of, UFC got a lot of crap. That was not an easy success story. Bill Simmons, Dave Portnoy at Barstool gets a lot of crap. Bill Burr's a Boston guy. Boston guys have an edge, and they're you know, sometimes they're not the most elegant in the way they present themselves, but they're tough guys.
Very unapologetic.
They're unapologetic. Maybe it's because, you know, they grew up not far from, you know, Plymouth Rock. They think they own the place. And I don't know what it is about Boston guys, but Bill Burr is the voice of Boston and America. He's common sense. He's smart. He's a great comedian. He was just in The King of Staten Island. It's now available on digital Blu-ray, and he is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So let's start with that. What is it about Boston guys and Dana White and Simmons?
Can we start by saying I am not the voice of Boston?
Okay.
I grew up in the suburbs. I'm not as tough as the guys, at least the Boston I remember. I don't know what Boston's like now. I left like 25 years ago.
So yeah.
I am the voice of safe suburban, the safe suburbs.
Okay.
South of Boston.
Okay, that's fair enough. So Joy's got Joy has the first question because you're in this movie, and Joy has a question for you. I have not seen it yet. My daughter has, Joy has. So what's the question?
So, Bill, we have a lot of hair conversations on this show, and you have a pretty glorious mustache in this movie, which is very funny, by the way. Did you grow that? Because that would be very impressive. Or is this a...
Yes. Yes, I did.
You grew that mustache.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't shave for a couple of months. Judd Apatow, the great Judd Apatow, said, all right, what are we going to do? You're playing a firefighter. You know, what I learned on the movies, you can't have a beard when you're a firefighter because it's, you know, you need the seal for the mask. So we were trying to think, you know, grow the hair out a little bit, do the horseshoe thing. I was like, you know, so then I just said, listen, I think the shaved head's going to look cool because I saw what the other people looked like. They all had hair. It'd be something different. And then just grew a beard, and hair and makeup sort of were like, what kind of mustache do you want? And I go, all right, I think this guy's probably like an old school guy. So
yeah,
he'll have like more of a, I mean, no firemen really have a mustache. I don't think like that. So it was a little ridiculous,
but it
was a comedy.
By the way, another Boston guy is Dennis Leary. He's another guy with an edge. You know, these guys are all quick. They're now. Let me ask you this: as a Boston.
Yeah. Now Dennis is from real Boston. He's from Charlestown.
Yeah, the fighters.
Which I'm sure is now like all condos and stuff like that. But back in the day, it was like all bank robbers and Dennis and Tony V.
So, as a Boston guy, if Brady goes to Tampa and wins a Super Bowl, would you be bitter?
I absolutely love this question, because every non-Patriots fan has been asking me this, and I can just really see how much this guy has broken your hearts. It's really a testament to how great he is. I absolutely would not be brokenhearted. He put us on the map. We were a joke. I can't say a total joke because we had Drew Bledsoe and Bill Parcells before then, but like, you know, we used to play. It looked like a high school football stadium, aluminum seats. He took us to 9 and we won 6. You can't complain. And what I love is if he wins in Tampa, he'll do what a lot of great quarterbacks have never been able to do, is go to that next team. You know, Joe Namath with the Rams, Johnny Unitas with Chicago, and on and on and on. I'm sorry, with San Diego. If he does this, I think it would be a great thing, because I know he's a huge fan of Joe Montana, and Joe Montana went to Kansas City, immediately made them a playoff team, but wasn't able to get them a championship. And if he wins it, I just want to know, what is Jim Irsay and the Colts going to say? How are they going to say he underhandedly beat them this time? So I would absolutely love it. Of course, I'm rooting for the Patriots, but if if the Patriots don't make it with Cam Newton, which I think we got as good a chance as anybody, I would love to see Tom Brady go up against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, sort of the next guy who's already arrived with his title. I would love to see that that matchup. I mean, I think that would be an incredible Super Bowl. But I am not bitter at all. In the last 20 years, I got to see all four of my sports teams win a championship. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I would have thought I would see the Red Sox win a World Series before I ever saw the Patriots win a Super Bowl. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't even feel like we were even in the league. We just had guys, you know, on work release from prison, plowing the field to give us a field goal. Our fans took the goalpost out of the stadium and got electrocuted on some wires. Somebody stabbed the police horse. We were like banned from Monday Night Football. The razor blade guy buys our team, and then, you know, somebody takes their towel off in front of a woman reporter. We were a joke. It was like it was an S show. Obviously Parcells and Drew Bledsoe. I'm not trying to discredit what they did, but like ever since Bob Kraft, I would say this: the three greatest coaching hires ever, Parcells to Pete Carroll to Bill Belichick. I don't know how you top that.
You know, it's funny because there's always a saying in New England: "In Bill we trust." And Bill is got a system, and he's tough, and he would call out Brady. And it's funny because you're an artist, you're a comedian, you're an actor. You need freedom.
Stretching it there. I'll go with that, though, but all right.
But you need – Judd Apatow's super smart, but Judd gives you the ability and the freedom to kind of, you know, see your way through perhaps what you're doing. Belichick doesn't give you
a lot. He saw the Matt Castle that I was, and he built the offense around me.
But if Tom left Belichick, and there was this sense that Belichick wore his ass out. He was exhausted from it. If you had to pick.
Oh, my God. Are you going to go Real Housewives on me here?
Well, I'm saying.
You weren't in the locker room. You don't know what happened. Who did you talk to?
I'm American.
Some other guy who never played professional sports by the water cooler. You don't know what happened. How about this? How about Tom did everything he could to make the team win? He was constantly deferring money so we could get better players. He's at the end. How about he goes to the sunshine, doesn't deal with the winter at state taxes? He gave us six. I mean, anybody who's upset with that move, you're just a miserable person.
Well, let me ask you this, though. If I said...
Yeah, come up with another, I don't know what the hell, Real Housewives reason...
If,
you know what I heard? I heard he told him he had to pull up his socks.
You're talking.
Didn't like that.
You're talking to America's honesty broker. I got a lot of sources. Okay, so.
Oh yeah, I always love when somebody tells me how honest they are. You gonna sell me a car now, Colin?
If Belichick or Brady, only one can win a Super Bowl next 5 years. Who would you choose? Where's your loyalty?
I'll tell you, this is how much I love both of them. That's tough. I wouldn't want to make. That's like Sophie's Choice. I want Tom to win so bad. I just want to hear how the Colts are going to cry on this one. And all of you guys in sports media, the way you backed out, the way you guys backed all their ridiculous complaining over the years is really shameful. But I also understand that it's a symptom of having a 24-hour news network now. You got to have something to talk about. But to be honest with you, I don't care. I think I would have cared before this pandemic, but at this point, I mean, I'm just happy sports are back. I'd like to see. Obviously, I want to see both of them win again, and prove to everybody who said that you know the ridiculous statements that Tom, he's a systems quarterback, he can plug anybody in, and people who just are constantly trying to come at Belichick because they can't figure out what he's doing, saying all kinds of horrible things about him. I hope they both, I hope Tom wins one this year, we won next year. And then I just want to hear what all these just babies, these whiners are going to say. I got to tell you, all those years when Dan Marino's with the Dolphins and they would kick our ass down the Orange Bowl, they would always beat us. Like, I never said anything bad about the – I love Dan Marino. The guy, I mean, I love Derek Jeter. All of those guys broke my sports heart 1,000 times, but I would never sit there and talk negatively about them that they were doing something underhanded. It's like they beat you. You lost by 35. enough.
Yeah, that's true. So now that you're doing movies and you're a comedian and now you act, and you had a great – we talked during the break. This is smart because I'm not much of an actor guy, although I love movies. And I said, how do you act?
I don't like football, but I love football, all right?
How do you act? Tell me the answer you gave me, because I thought this was a really good answer. I said, how do you fake it? How do you pretend after being authentic on a stage for 30 years?
Well, thank you for giving me the nod that I haven't been full of S when I've been on stage. But no, it's just all – I learned from watching a guy, Jeffrey Tambor, is the guy I learned the most from on how to do comedy, where I would watch him on Larry Sanders. What made it funny was he wasn't trying to be funny. He just believed everything that he was saying. And that show was on at the same time I'd first gone down to New York. And I remember walking up the street on the Upper East Side, and I saw this beginning of a bar fight spilled out onto the street. And there was these two guys squaring off, and I could tell that neither one of them wanted to fight. But neither one could back down because all their friends were watching. So they were terrified. But because I had no skin in the game, when I watched it, it was hilarious to me. But neither one of them were trying to be funny. But they're trying to be, like, tough when they were actually scared made it funny. And I remember it finally what Jeffrey Tambor was doing clicked to me when he would be upset on the show about not Hank, his character, not getting the respect he felt he deserved and being this second banana and sort of treated like this buffoon, not only by the public, but by the guys that he worked with. What made it funny was that he cared. He wasn't trying to be funny. He really just wanted to have this respect. And there's this great scene one time when he's yelling at Larry Sanders, and Rip Torn is actually listening on the answering machine. And the look of pain on his face when he discovers that, as he's pouring his heart out to Larry Sanders, that he's still a joke, was absolutely, it was hilarious and heartbreaking all at the same time. So I feel like that's what I learned, and that's what I'm trying to do.
It's such a smart answer, isn't it? It's a really good answer.
Every once in a while, I get lucky, Colin.
So when's the last time you did a stand-up act? Because you can't go inside anymore. When's the last time?
March 10th. I opened for, I did a show with Dean Del Rey, great comic and former frontman for a rock band. And he loves Bon Scott, has like a tattoo of him, killer tattoo right on his side. And he did it was like 40 years since Bon Scott had passed. So he put together this comedy and tribute to Bon Scott AC/DC show. So me, Dean Del Rey and Mark Maron, going back, I forget who else was on the show. We did stand up first, and then a band came out and with all these heavy hitters like Steve Gorman, Brad Wilk. Of course, I'm naming all the drummers. I'm a drum geek. There's all these amazing players, and we had like the greatest night ever, and then it was just over. I can't wait to get back on stage, though. I can tell you that.
King of Staten Island available, digital, Blu-ray, DVD, August 25th. So you don't like being called, what did I call you? You're the everyman of Boston, and you were offended by that because you grew up in the burbs.
No, so. You said I spoke for Boston. Yeah. And I'd like to go back there and actually be able to relax at some point, so I can't accept that title.
It's great seeing you. Congrats on your success. Well,
by the way, I got to give a shout out to a buddy of mine. I just found out passed away literally 90 minutes ago. Like one of the biggest, might be the biggest Patriots fans of all time. Wayne Previty, one of my great friends, rest in peace. Hilarious comedian and an even better friend. Absolutely heartbroken about that. So he was such a Patriots fan. I was joking with a buddy of mine. I think he couldn't bear to see Tom Brady in a Buccaneers jersey. So maybe that's why he checked out. I don't know. But love you forever, brother.
Good seeing you, Billy. I appreciate you coming on after that. Emotional day for you, and I appreciate it, man.
No worries. Thank you.
Yep, Bill Burr. He's got King of Staten Island. Family members have seen it. You have seen it, and I will eventually see it with Pete Davidson, the Saturday Night Live guy.
Yeah.
But we just had a conversation in my car. Lexi, my stepdaughter, was talking about how much she loved Pete Davidson.
It's a very good movie. It's actually very, like, it's a comedy, but it's very, like, well thought out, intellectual comedy.
Okay, my NFL standings in a couple of minutes. First, Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, MLB is not in a bubble, but the professional leagues that have implemented a bubble for their season restarts have been very successful so far.
Yeah.
And MLB has taken notice and is reportedly in preliminary talks to use a bubble model for the 2020 postseason. MLB is even considering a multi-city format similar to the NHL and believes a single city bubble like the NBA has in Orlando would be difficult for them to replicate. No favorites have emerged for a potential host location yet, but Chicago, New York, and Southern California are being looked at. So the NHL decided to use two hub cities, Edmonton for the West and Toronto for the East.
Yeah, no, NHL and NBA and MLS, master.
Well, the bubbles have all...
They've all worked.
I mean, the idea of a bubble is perfect for a pandemic because you want to stay away from other people, you want to quarantine, and then keep that quarantine space free of the virus. So it makes sense that it's working.
I mean, you and I have been kind of in family bubbles. I mean, that was initially the first 3 months was stay away from people. No, airlines weren't flying. So micro, macro, the bubble system works. It's just kind of unrealistic for everything. And by the way, the baseball player union is very strong.
Right.
So the bubble was suggested and the guys were like, no, thank you. The reason the NBA bubble worked is the NBA union is not quite as strong.
But also there's just not the same amount of people. There's not the same type of facilities that you need to use for that particular sport. So, yes, the NBA bubble and the NHL bubble makes sense. MLS, those facilities are available. They're like for the NFL, it's impossible. There's nowhere to put all of those people and have those fields and for that amount of time to be in a bubble.
You know, it's interesting. For years and years, I worked at Disney and I would go to Orlando with my kids and I would always see the Wide World of Sports facility. It was very well known. And I remember asking somebody at my former employer, I'm like, what do they do with this?
Huge, massive AAU tournaments.
I could never, and I'm like, God, these fields are beautiful. There's nobody ever on them.
No, no, there are.
And now they're like pandemic perfect.
Well, yeah, they're yes. And that's why IMG Academy is working perfectly for WNBA. Like these are places where they have massive tournaments with thousands of kids and their families throughout the year. So these facilities already exist, but for those particular sports, so you don't have those for football and generally not for baseball either with that many people. But it's not a terrible idea for postseason because it's not as long.
And you have a finite number of teams.
Right. Yeah. So whether they'll end up doing it or not, I mean, as long as everything continues to trend the way it is, which is positive and they're getting it done, it may not really be necessary. But the fact that they're looking into it, as you said earlier, I think it's you should commend baseball for it because we're very critical of them for not being rigid most of the time. And they've been extremely flexible and gotten done.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't love the fact that they negotiated their deal in public. But other than that, they've done, and I think 13,000 tests, 0.1% positive. Let's slow down on baseball screwing it up. It's worked.
They're not in a bubble.
It's harder.
So you can't compare it to a bubble. They've done an excellent job. So NFL games could be a lot quieter this season if fans aren't in attendance. Not sure how the NFL is going to do that as far as airing it goes. We see what the NBA has done. But Josh McDaniels discussed how he would try to protect his offensive game plan if stadiums are empty.
I think that you probably will self-scout yourself a little bit more with the television copy and figure out, you know, because they have the mics all over the place. And so, you know, you just got to be careful how much of what you're saying is easily detectable. I think it's more about protecting yourself and not giving everything away, you know, week after week.
Oh, the irony of this is not lost on me, trust me. But he does have a point. They can't completely learn new terminology for their offensive plays to try and confuse everyone week to week. Like, this is part of putting in your system. You know what certain things mean.
Especially with no preseason.
Right. I mean, it's even if with a preseason, you can't change the name of plays every single week to week. Like, this is a terminology that you have to use and commit to memory and then go out in the field and do it. It's too much to change it up all the time just because people are scouting. I do think that's similar to the NBA, because this was a concern that the NBA had as well. And the games sound like there's a full arena of people there. Like, it doesn't sound any different to me than without fans because of what the announcers and what the NBA has done for the airing. Like, to me, I feel like I'm watching a regular game. And at this point, I've watched so many games that it's just like a new normal to me. It doesn't feel odd anymore. So I'm sure that the NFL is going to pump in crowd noise and do different kind of visual elements and sound elements so that we're not going to hear everything that they're saying. But it is kind of funny coming from the Patriots.
Yeah.
So the Lakers locked up the one seed in the West, but they haven't played their best in the bubble overall. The team snapped a 3-game losing streak last night to get to a 3-4 record in Orlando. And LeBron says the team isn't in a playoff mindset just yet.
as far as mentally, I'm not in playoff mode. Physically, I'm getting there. I feel like my legs are gotten better and better. My game has improved more and more. I'm getting more and more comfortable with the bubble. But as far as the mental side of it, I'm not there personally. I don't think our team is there personally, but we will be. It's a different type of mindset that you have to be in. But you don't want to jump into it before you actually get there, because it takes a lot of energy, a lot of effort.
By the way, isn't it amazing how great LeBron James' shape is, and yet he says, "I'm not in playoff shape yet," and think he's one of the best conditioned athletes in the world, and he's like, it just goes to show you, to get into great playoff shape, the quality of athleticism you have and cardio, that LeBron, who is having probably secret workouts, is like, "Yeah, I'm not there yet."
I think he's speaking more from a mental space. And I don't really love that he's putting that out there, because they're not playing great.
Not at all.
By Lakers standards. And it kind of feels like he's sort of underselling the team a little bit. Like he's sort of relieving a little pressure.
Or he kind of knows what he has. How about that?
Or maybe that is, that's what it is as well. But I personally don't feel like all the pressure is on the Lakers this year. The only team that I think has any kind of pressure on them is the Bucks, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, Bucks have to get to the final. Yeah. Minimum, have to get to the final.
If the Clippers lose in the Western Conference Finals, okay, that's there's no shame in that.
Milwaukee
There's no shame in any team except for the Bucks.
Bucks at least have to get to the finals.
Yes.
If they can't get out of the East, Boston doesn't have a center that can guard Giannis. Like, I'm sorry, that's not good
enough.
No,
they absolutely must make the finals. But to me, they're the only team with pressure. I just think it's kind of interesting that LeBron keeps putting these things out there. Not that they're not disingenuous. They may be how he really feels. But, you know, this talk about whether the Lakers really have what it takes to win the championship this year is drumming up, and it's kind of coinciding with these comments.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Tomorrow's headlines today is something we do Friday with Jason McIntyre. He's getting very expensive. I'm going to do my own 5 headlines you will see in the NFL this year coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
By the way, Big Ten football season has just been canceled. A lot of people going to lose their jobs. It's tough. Big Ten football season has officially been canceled. So they're going to try for spring football, which I think is doable. Urban Meyer doesn't like it. It's doable. But so there you go. So my guess is the Pac-12 schedule. Pac-12's always been a little pious and precious. They will cancel in the next 24 hours. So, but the ACC, the Duke, the medical advisor for the ACC conference is a Duke doctor. And he said, you can play football. So the ACC and the SEC, where college football is really popular, they are all in on this so far. Big 12 will, I think Big 12. But I've said this before. Now, this was kind of our prediction, that the Big 10 and the Pac-12 see themselves as very academic institutions. And the Ivy League canceled. And the Pac-12, I grew up out here, they see themselves as winner of the Sears Cup, our volleyball, our swimming matter. In the SEC, they're like, listen, we do football. I don't really care about anything else. And I just don't think college football means as much out west. So I think the Big Ten season has been canceled. I think athletes are safer in athletic bubbles than not. It looks like it's going to be a year of pro sports, which, by the way, pro sports has always been more popular than college sports. NHL is more popular than college hockey. NFL is much more popular than college basketball. NBA gets much bigger ratings than college basketball. So pro sports are working, but pro sports have billionaire owners. And billionaire owners can write $25 million checks. I mean, this really comes down to a financial issue. So pro athletes are playing. Pro athletes are older than college athletes. And nobody 17, 18, and under is dying of COVID. So this is really, to me, if you say it's just, well, this is a health issue, my takeaway, well, then why are pro athletes doing it? Pro athletes are, there are a lot of pro athletes are 35 years old, 38. College athletes are 21. So you're basically saying in the NFL, because you can get all the testing in the bubbles, we feel good about it. But in college, where it's more semi-bubble, we don't feel good about it. And I contend this feels, to me, a lot like lawsuit fear, litigation concerns, because the numbers tell you Michigan, Alabama, Ohio State, they're testing all day. Michigan's last 353 tests, they don't have a single positive. Their last 453 tests, they have one or two positives. So, I mean, the testing is showing you these bubbles, these college athletic bubbles, there are not a lot of positive tests. Really not. And by the way, what's interesting with the Big Ten is 13 Big Ten campuses are allowing students on, which is like, wait a minute, they don't have all these medical professionals around them like the athletes do, and the athletes are all being tested. Nick Saban said today, you could be tested every day if you want. We have people there. So they're saying, I guess what they're saying in the Big Ten is it's player safety. Well, 13 campuses are having kids. They don't have doctors around them. So my takeaway is, this is why I've said, Joey and I talked about this earlier. All this is so confusing to me. I mean, airplanes are packed. I was inside of a restaurant this weekend. That's okay. State to state, we don't have any protocols. I mean, California, you can't be in a restaurant. I was in Park City, Utah. I was in a restaurant. Beaches, go for it. I've said this before. I can't figure out why you can't have 10,000 people at a Phillies or a Dodgers game, but you can have people sitting next to each other in a restaurant. Indoors. Outdoors with a mask, no. Indoors eating without a mask, and we know this travels very quickly with food. Like buffets are a nightmare, right? I don't have the answers to it, but I think we're just – and I talk a lot of NFL and NBA. As long as the NBA gives me a good playoff and the NFL plays, you know, I'm fine. But it is – I mean, we're kind of making it up as we go. Like airlines are packed in a small tube for 6 hours. You went on a flight right next to somebody.
We're in management mode at this point in our society.
We're managing it.
We're managing it. This is a this comes down to a liability issue and a lack of leadership. There's no voice for college football. There's no commissioner. There's no one that was set to organize all of these different conferences, put together a safety protocol that all of those presidents of the colleges agreed to. It's just everyone was just doing their own thing.
If I'm a president of Michigan, I can let students on campus without taking tests weekly, but I can't let football players on campus taking literally potentially three tests a week. Well, they're banging into each other. You think college kids are not? You think they're all social distancing on a college campus and wearing masks?
They're also going to be in classrooms together. No, isn't that the point of them coming into school?
So kids won't be intimate on campus. They won't party on campus. They won't. You got to be kidding me. These are college kids. So if it's safety, I don't buy the argument. If it's safety, why are airlines flying? I'm going to a restaurant
tonight. Well, it's safety, but it's safety paired with liability.
That's what it feels like to me. It feels like lawyers are running college football. Their people are petrified. By the way, medical professionals disagree. The advisor for the ACC, who's a Duke doctor, he went to med school and stuff. That matters. His opinion today is, yes, you can have football. Just constant testing, tracing, testing, it's fine. So that doctor says, yes, you can do it. I mean,
I'm really heartbroken for these athletes. It's I can't imagine how
can
they
you
feel.
Imagine all you're a fourth or a fifth year senior. Joe Burrow's story does not exist if he was a senior this year. Joe Burrow's life has been changed by last year of college football. He would have been a fifth-round pick.
Yeah.
He's the number one pick in the draft. So if you don't think college sports changes lives, I mean, think about the opportunities college sports give to kids that don't have great financial wherewithal or backgrounds. It's a life – I've written about this in both my books. The idea – what college sports really does, it changes lives.
Yeah, well, we're not just speaking from a callous place of just want college sports. We have sports back.
And these,
I would love to see college football,
how about these,
but there's a human element to this as
well.
How
about these college towns? This is their income in Auburn, Alabama. This is how they make Eugene, Oregon. This is what's the economy? You need those 8 home days. Summer and sports in full swing. Do-it-yourself projects. I suggest Lowe's, my cool little bar cart with the tray with a big C on it. Excited to say the work has started. Good stuff. Get inspired. Lowe's.com. Big Ten football season is officially canceled. They'll try spring football. Fingers crossed there. See you tomorrow. It's The Herd.